Good afternoon. This is Dr. Dan Guerra, this is Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is 22 April 2024. We're doing lecture number 9 in our series on immune cell membrane biochemistry. So, last time we were talking about these microparticles that are generated from the membrane after activation of neutrophils. And the microparticles can induce coagulation. So I want to finish that real quickly and then move on. So one of the proteins we were talking about last time was PSGL1. And I'll remind you of this. Failure to partition into rafts prevented PSGL1 and CD44 from activating SF kinases and therefore generating microparticles. And I told you that microparticles are typically considered procoagulant, found in the blood, and they work through P-selectin glycoprotein ligand 1. That is the PSGL1. Now, I told you that that's the murine gene. Human gene is actually SELPLG. Now, that gene specifically encodes for a glycoprotein that functions with high affinity counter-reception for cell adhesion molecules. It's another way of saying it, right? And those, of course, are PE and L selectins. And you find them on myeloid cells and importantly for these lectures, stimulated T lymphocytes. So the protein SELPLG, this glycosylated protein, known as PSGL1 in the mouse model, is significant for leukocyte trafficking during inflammation, generation of microparticles, and the tethering of leukocytes to activated platelets, that's the coagulation component, or endothelia, which express, of course, the selectin proteins. Okay? Again, the microparticles, what they do is specifically bind to thrombi, and they're involved then in thrombin generation at sites of injury. And I told you that severe infection can be accompanied by disturbances in hemostatic balance or valence. Valence and balance aren't the same thing. Valence has to do with weighting on one side or other of a balancing. Right, and the most severe manifestation that's been described is known as DIC. That's clinical syndrome of disseminated intravascular coagulation. And what that's characterized and presented as extensive activation of coagulation system amplified by a commensurate inhibition of anticoagulant pathways. And of course, that's protein C and protein S thrombomodulin system and the fibrinolytic system. Okay. So that is just putting you back where we were. Now, PSGL1 or the SLG protein in humans, as well as CD43, CD44, they have and require COR1 derived oxygen linked glycans to associate with lipid rafts. Now, protein glycosylation, I want to go into a little bit of detail about this, can occur in multiple ways. Typically, you see an asparagine-linked glycosylation. Of course, that's going to be nitrogen-linked, okay? You also have the oxygen GalNAc, which is the mucin type. And then you have, and those are called mucin type glycans. Then you have the oxygen-linked GlucNAc, oxygen-linked fucose, and the oxygen-linked mannose and glucose, okay? However, here's a very important thing for you to take under consideration here in the thing biochemistry. That glycosylation we talk about, because it has specific, you know, remember, when you get a covalent modification of polypeptide, for that matter, any compound, including lipids, it is the structure of that compound or the sequence that is the template for that covalent modification, in this case, glycosylation. So if you have the template, you have the right amino acid residues in the right formation, one amino acid after the other, in sequence, in the polypeptide, in the correct folded polypeptide, that can be a substrate for glycosylation, right? Well, let me tell you something a little bit more detailed that you don't get in textbooks. Glycosylation is considered a template independent process, not just a dependent one, even though the template or the substrate plays a pretty important role. Because the composition ultimately of the glycans that are generated. Now, we know this for multiple reasons. Okay, I'll tell you right now, one of the reasons we know this, way back years ago, I used to work in protein expression systems in plants. And it wasn't my work, but other people were doing research that was examining whether or not immunoglobulins could be generated, or glycosylated proteins in general could be generated in plants for commercial use. And they could, but the glycosylation pattern in the plants was distinct from the glycosylation pattern in the animal. Therefore, if glycosylation plays a specific role in glycosylated proteins acting as, for example, antibodies, IgG-type proteins, right, then they weren't going to necessarily function correctly, and that's indeed what they found, okay? So, template independent process, actually, because it has to do with the glycosylation signature has to do with the cell specificity of the glycosylation reactions, which I just told you I remember from colleagues of mine working on plant antibody production, you know, generating immunoglobulins, glycosylated proteins in plants, for purposes of biomedical research, etc. So what really is going on is the glycan structure is influenced by not only cell type, plant versus animal, big difference, but also the metabolic state of the cell. Now, why would that be? It's obvious why. What is the availability of the substrate nucleotide sugar, right? So that's one component. Secondarily, the expression pattern of the glycosidases and the glycosyltransferases, the epimerases, because these are carbohydrates after all, and also the nucleotide sugar transporters. And all of this is being is an event functioning within the endoplasmic reticulum and the Golgi, and even in the plasma membrane, and then the nuclear envelope, and then the peroxisomal membrane. So without a template, cell-specific programming of homogeneous protein glycosylation just doesn't happen. Even though there's significant heterogeneity of the glycome, which is what it's called, right, that you observe in various clinical analyses, such as disease states, the differences actually are pointing to major changes in the cellular and molecular properties where those glycosylated proteins were generated. Okay, so in order for us to know the specific glycan covalently bound to proteins, not only does compositional analysis have to be done, but the structural information has to look at the potential for the glycosidic linkages. That would be, of course, alpha versus beta, and, of course, between any of the hydroxyls on any given polysaccharide or even monosaccharide, so that we know specifically what carbon atom is associated with that glycosylation. Okay. There's a lot of variations within the carbohydrates, within the monosaccharides, disaccharides, polysaccharides, obviously. And monosaccharides are usually the main substrate, because these are usually UDP or ADP carbohydrate, nucleotide sugars, right? So, and monosaccharides tend to be the major substrate. Although, the reason I talk about polysaccharides and disaccharides, those can be broken down, and then the monomeric elements reacted with the nucleotide, and then making the nucleotide or nucleoside sugars. Right? And also, you can get things like phosphorylation and sulfation. You know that too, of course. Right? So, you have to consider that then when you think about these proteins that are glycosyl is. So consider whether PSGL1, when it's associated with lipid membrane rafts, if that specific extracellular domain has anything to do with its residency in the raft to be therefore deposited appropriately in the T cell receptor associated plasma membrane. So we know that many cells, not just immune cells, but epithelial cells, for example, have multiple types of nitrogen-linked and oxygen-linked glycans. And those glycans are used for signaling, but they're also used for transport mechanisms. And so all of those apical domains that are associated with the membrane lipid raft need to be transported to a specific location in sequence within the membrane. In, for example, a T lymphocyte, a plasma lemma. So you can prompt a proposition here and say maybe multiple oxygen or even nitrogen-linked glycans can occur on the extracellular domain of PSGL1. And that could contribute ultimately not only to its final placement, to whether or not it contributed to the targeting of the lipid membrane raft, right, during the sorting process. Now, leukocytes from endothelial and hematopoietic core, okay, endothelial hematopoietic core is called EHC, and mice that are missing a specific core carbohydrate, when they're missing the core carbohydrate, the GalNAc that's normally in serines and threonines may still be found, but that core so-called class 1 derived oxygen-linked glycan, including core 1, extended core 1 and 2, may not be expressed on that PSGL1. So that means you're going to have different molecular species, not only of PSGL1, otherwise, remember that the human protein is going to have the same effects, right? So that's the cell PLG protein, right? So you have to be able to sequence those carbohydrates on those isolated proteins to see what role they're playing in this one thing we're talking about here, just the production of those microparticles, such as those cytokines, which induce the potential for coagulation. Right, and some severe disease states. That's why we're all into this discussion here, right? So that's the key feature. Now, they can use, in order to get to the core and to look at the sequence, you can do compositional analyses using mass spec, GC or LC mass spec. But there's a new type of mass spec that's just been discussed. Let me see if I can find it here. I'm going to tell you about it. Yeah, paper published in the Journal of American Society of Mass Spectrometry in November of 2023, so not that long ago, 5 months ago? They claim this is the first time they've been able to do spatial mapping of nitrogen-linked glycans in situ in biological tissues. And what they're using is a nanospray desorption electrospray ionization mass spec. Now, that's going to be the imaging technique that's used. It's called nano-desi MSI. And they're calling it an ambient. That means it's going to be a localized ionization technique that was typically used in the past for imaging lipids and proteins in general in biological tissues. Before and after, say, a treatment with a drug, right? Looking for changes in glycosylation patterns. So N-linked glycans can be released from glycoproteins using enzymatic digestion. And typically what they use are peptide N-glycosidases, and those are N-glycosidase isoform F. And that gives them some spatial localization, which then can be followed by this nano-desi MSI. And then this late 2023 paper, they say, they demonstrate that they can image nitrogen-linked glycans directly in formalin-fixed, paraffin-embedded human hepatocellular carcinoma and prostate cell preparations. And they can do it both in the positive and negative ionization mode. So for cross-referencing, and they say they can examine localization of some 38 unique nitrogen-linked glycans. And these include such glycans as high mannose, hybrid fucosylated, and what's going to come up in a few minutes here, many sialated glycans, that is with sialic acid or N-acetylneuraminic acid, synonym for sialic acid, which I mentioned last time. Okay, so a paper just published is now trying to get into basically trying to sequence the specific carbohydrates that are linked on these proteins on specific carbon atoms and then a specific amino acids associated with the polypeptide, right? And there's going to be a great deal of discussion there about which carbon atoms are specifically involved in the bonding, the glycosyl bonding to the amino acids and the polypeptides. And that's going to change that configuration, going to change the event ontology. Like that is how these glycoproteins are functioning in the events of biological systems, right? So all of these substances all are, remember, constantly changing and turning over and mobile. And that's what matters to us is the event, not simply the structure. All right, so that's a good find, right? That's a good thing to know that that's the case. So, paper published in Trends in Immunology gives you a little bit more detail about protein glycosylation. Since we do lectures here, we try to give you all the authentic information. I will give you some of this as well from this paper. So this paper tells me that glycosylation of polypeptides split into three classes. So you get co-translational N-linked glycosylation, and then post-translational oxygen-linked glycosylation, and the O-GlucNAC modifications, which are also post-translational. So the N-linked glycosylation originates from transfer of a large precursor, see I told you, oligosaccharide from a membrane-embedded dolichyl phosphate. Remember, that comes from isoprenoid biosynthesis, right? And it gives dolichyl phosphate, dolichyl pyrophosphate, of course, are lipids from cholesterol pathway, right? Actually, from isoprenoid pathway. And dolichyl is produced before the squalene intermediate. So that means HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors are going to be inhibiting all of this dolichyl phosphate mediated glycosylation. So in statins, remember, inhibit HMG-CoA reductase. So they're going to inhibit the production, the efficient production of all these glycosylated proteins. Now think about what that might mean. Yeah. Okay. Now, so dolichyl pyrophosphate is used in these nitrogen-linked glycosylation patterns and asparagine residues. Synthesis occurs at the rough endoplasmic reticulum because that's where protein synthesis is occurring. Remember, the nitrogen linkages are added co-translationally. It's happening in the ER. Remember, I always talk about glycosylation of proteins during translation. It's an ER-mediated process most often. And the glycans that are generated on those nascent proteins after translation, well, during translation, are actually necessary for correct protein folding. And what subsequently has to occur which is an interaction with endoplasmic reticulum chaperones, proteins like calnexins and calreticulins. And that serves as a checkpoint in protein glycosylation maturation in the ER, right? Their interaction with those two proteins, those two chaperones, right? And there's all kinds of post-glycosylation trimming of that glycan tree for the specific proteins having a specific glycome or glycosylation matrix on their surface. Not all proteins have, you know, the same glycosylation effect. They're always going to be unique. Right? And remember that it depends on the cell's ability to produce the nucleotide carbohydrates, monosaccharides typically, in the correct molar concentration for the glycosyl transferases to faithfully generate the glycosylated polypeptide final product. So it has to do with intermediary metabolism, right? Yeah, such as what? Such as prenolipid synthesis, yeah, okay. Which can be corrupted by statin drugs, all right? Keep on telling you that because that's the case. That's authentic. Now, oxygen-linked glycosylation is a much broader category, obviously, because it's going to be post-translational. Why do I say that's obvious? Because that means you're going to have a substrate that's already gone through translation. There's going to be covalent modifications that can be added and removed as well, just like acylation and prenylation of polypeptides can as well, right? These covalent modifications are reversible, is what I'm telling you, but not by the same enzyme. These glycosyl transferases sometimes can, sometimes cannot. Sometimes you need a glycosidase to remove a carbohydrate from a specific covalent bonding of a polypeptide. So that's another level of complexity. So the oxygen-linked glycosylation, very broad, modifications of those glycosylic linkages on the oxygen of either a threonine or serine, because they have hydroxyl groups, remember, means you get multiple types of glycans. Remember, I've already told you, fucose, mannose, and the GalNAc, right? Those are three common ones. And because of that, they are different from N-glycosylation because they are progressively altered by carbohydrate trimming via the glycosidases, right? And this is all going down post-translationally. So O-GalNAc, which is the mucin-type glycan, is initiated by a family of some 20 distinct homologous galactosyl transferases. Now, those genes are called GalNITs, G-A-L-N-Ts. But they have overlapping activity, that is substrate specificity. And so that means that there are variable degrees of the potency of substrate specificity. So after adding the initial O-GalNAc carbohydrate residue, more assembly follows with one of eight different unique core structures, which are further metabolized into complex structures using various glycosyl transferases. And that happens not in the ER, but in the Golgi apparatus, right? The dictyosome. So O-GalNAc glycans are best known as the mucin-like glycans. And they actually produce or are responsible for most of the mass of mucin proteins in the cell. And they function contextually and temporally because one of the major effects of these oxygen-linked glycans is hydration. Water of hydration plays a role. And that means they play a role in generating viscosity barriers that occur within cells, between cells, and associated with the potentiation of pathogens. Okay? So these carbohydrate moieties play a very significant role. And that's hard for me to say because I'm a lipid biochemist. I usually yawn at carbohydrates, right? So oxygen-linked mannoses, like the oxygen-linked GalNAcs, can be elaborated the same way. There's a core structure, and there's all these heterodimeric oxygen-linked mannosyl transferase-type enzymes that function in the ER. And then you get a whole series of other downstream dedicated enzymes in the Golgi, just like with the O-GalNAcs, right? Okay. So, and what else I really want to say here, this goes into all kinds of detail, but some of the reason we know about allospecificity is because there are congenital muscular dystrophies directly linked to inappropriate glycosylation of proteins. So there's the alpha dystroglycan for extracellular matrix proteins that are implicated in some of those congenital muscular dystrophies, right? And then you have an EGF repeat of the Notch protein. Now, that's a receptor that modulates interactions and also works downstream in signaling. And so the Notch oxygen fucose can be modified by GlucNAc residue addition through the action of enzymes known as fringe enzymes, which modulate the Notch pathway because of that glycosylation. Okay? We talked about the Notch pathway before. Very important for signaling. Super important pathway for signaling. And ultimately gene expression too. So the O-GlucNAc modification uniquely found in reducing environment of the cytoplasm. Not the ER, not the Golgi. Very dynamic compared with all those other glycosylations. So oxygen glucnacylation is considered a very ancient, evolutionarily conserved system that is found all the way down to simple microorganisms to humans. Many of the enzymes seem to be relatively conserved. The O-GlucNAc transferase, the OGT, which we talked about in the past, and the GlucNAc glycosylase, the OGA enzyme. We talked about that one too. Remember, they have broad specificity, and the holoenzymes have to be modified for them to be able to be found in different target cells in humans. So that whole glycosylation pattern is complex from the beginning to the end, right? From every aspect of it. And this is playing an absolutely significant role in the interaction of T cell receptors within the T cell membrane and antigen presenting cells at the site of the immune synapse. So think about the neutrophils rolling on the surface of cells and the arresting and then sometimes the complete uptake of cells into, say, endothelia, or simply the arresting of a neutrophil near the surface of a T cell or maybe another innate immune cell, triggering the production of pro-inflammatory cytokines or even these procoagulants. You see, that's just a couple of things that play a significant downstream role from protein glycosylation, which is, I just told you, dependent on lipid metabolism, right? At least what's occurring with anything associated with dolichopyrophosphate in the plasma reticulum. So I'm going to stop there with that rather interesting carbohydrate ending. This is Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry. I guess this is Monday afternoon. Wishing you a very pleasant evening with your family. And, of course, bye for now.